Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to my podcast, Introverted Queen. On today's episode, I am speaking to Caleb. He is an independent content creator and journalist. We talked about content creation and connection in the Christian community, and he also shared some advice about starting something new. Check it out. Hi, Caleb.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I am doing amazing. It's sunny and I'm warm.
Awesome.
And I'm happy.
Good. Thank you for being a guest on my podcast, by the way.
You're welcome. As soon as I saw it, I was like, what an honor. I'm just excited. I love people starting things. I love it.
Awesome. Awesome. So how would you describe yourself?
Ooh, big question. Are we talking career or personal, like, being, or both?
Both, actually.
When it comes to personality, I would describe myself as curious and stubborn. my life, I mean, I am a person who, at this point, is really looking around saying, like, what haven't I tried? Mm-hmm. Who haven't I met? What are things I don't know, and how can I put myself in a space where I will learn more? Mm-hmm. So I don't have to be really good at anything. I don't have to be competitive. I just want to try things. Mm-hmm. And that's a direct reaction to growing up as a kid afraid of everything. Absolutely everything. The dark, dogs, needles, people, strangers, going to school. I mean, no matter water, anything, I was afraid of it. And I've almost overcompensated by saying, like, if I have any discomfort, if I have any fear, I'm gonna run straight toward it and see what happens. So in my adult life, you know, that's habit, that's personality now, but it's formed intentionally. It's not natural.
Right.
As far as my career and maybe you know, where that overlaps with maybe some of the listeners or anything else. I run a platform called Humans of Adventism, as well as five or six other contracts alongside the church. And my job and role and all of that is always really as a facilitator for life stories. Mm. So I am the person behind the camera or, you know, whatever, behind the microphone sometimes, really sitting with people as long as they need me to. And pulling out the important experiences from their life, the meaningful, formative things that have happened to them that they've lived through and how that forms who they are and how they think. And then the other side of my job that people don't think about is how to package that for the internet. Mm-hmm. So if I'm sitting on 6 hours of someone's story, how do you put that on Instagram? How do you put that on Facebook or a podcast or a YouTube video? So I have a very social side of my job, and that is to talk to people and record it. And then I have a much more mundane, kind of to myself, isolated part of my job that takes up much more time. Mm-hmm. And that is packaging, editing, cutting down, cutting into multiple parts, and figuring out where to place each of these stories through different outlets.
Okay.
Yep.
So in doing what you do now, is it something that young Caleb thought that he would do?
This question gets me a little emotional because depending on where we go with my story, I didn't know that I could have a life like I have. My family in my earliest life was very, very poor, to the point where we started growing our own food to try to supplement our grocery bill. We had donations from neighbors and were on government assistance. At the lowest point, my parents collectively made $12,500 in a year, total and I was living in one of the poorest states in the country, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, I grew up in a very blue collar family. I grew up in a family where you worked construction or, you know, farming or something like that. And that was kind of sometimes I thought that was kind of the highest I could aspire to. Mm-hmm. And to break out of that, and to really chase down what I love to do and what I do today has been a process of a lot of years of working in service industry and construction industry before anything ever really picked up for what I really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So young Caleb, seeing me now, my political views, my personality, my daily pattern of life is so outside of what I thought it could be, mm-hmm. that I couldn't have hoped for what it became. Really, I didn't have the tools or the knowledge to know that this could happen. Mm-hmm. And so I'm grateful. More than anything, I'm just grateful because it's turned out so much better than the highest aspiration I hoped for.
Right. That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
So your series, you were talking about Humans of Adventism. Yep. What did you learn from that experience, and what motivated you to start this whole amazing docuseries?
So Humans of Adventism itself has existed since 2017. Mm. When I started, I was a huge fan of Humans of New York.
Yes.
At the time, there were lots of kind of offshoot pages starting. Mm-hmm. So I was reading, I was like reading every post from Humans of New York and learning so much about how people saw the world. And if you don't know, Humans of New York is just a guy, early 20s, who went out with his camera into the streets of New York City, took pictures of people and just posted what they told him. Mm-hmm. Some of them are only one sentence. Some of them are, 36 part stories. Mm-hmm. But I was so inspired because this guy had very little training, very little background, and no funding to start something.
That's right.
And yet, as a reader, I was being changed. I felt myself growing more empathetic. I felt myself growing more curious with every story that I read from him. So, as more pages kind of exploded from this, I saw Humans of Seattle, Humans of Chicago, Humans of Judaism, Humans of Islam, Humans of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I mean, just every possible version of this. And I really looked for Humans of Adventism because I wanted to be a reader. Mm. I was like, what I would love is our stories, not a theological thing, not a revelation seminar, not a devotional pitch, but who are we? Like, mm-hmm. who makes up this church? What are the people like? And what have they lived through? And why are they the way that they are? And because I would go to church for my whole life and sit down next to somebody who's 70 years old, and I would see them as that old man that goes to church.
Yes.
The end. Mm-hmm. I know that I went to their house one time, and it was weird, and they served special kalo. And that's all I know. Who were they? What is their life like? What does everything work like outside of the church, sermon experience that we go to every week? Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to read it. Mm-hmm. I had no concept that, like, if I started this, people would really like it. But because of that tension, I thought, like, why hasn't anyone done this? And so I started asking around and really sent an email out to like 30 people that I knew, pastors and people I grew up with and, Adventists of all shapes and sizes. And I said, why isn't there something like this? And if someone started something like this, would you read it? Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of people, even my own friends, did not respond.
Really?
So it was they were having a hard time conceptualizing what this would look like. Mm-hmm. And I remember one email from probably the most influential pastor. I didn't really know him well. He had just spoken at kind of this big camp meeting event one time that I had been at. And he was one of the only people that responded. And I remember the exact words that he used. He just sent me a simple message. No, best regards, nothing. It just said, I like it. Do it. Mm. two sentences. I like it, period, do it.
So simple.
Okay? But that was one of the most inspiring things to get me off my butt to do something where I was like, I could do that.
Right.
You know, at the time, I'm a young person in early 20s. I'm like iffy with the church. I'm newly back after leaving. And I'm like, do I have to ask my pastor? Do I have to like send a letter to the general conference and ask if I can do this? Is somebody going to sue me for making humans of Adventism? Like, is that copyrighted? You know, all of these questions. And I remember one day I was just like, you know what? I don't have a lot of money anyway. If they, you know, like it doesn't matter. Like I'm just going to try it. And if I get in trouble, I get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. And I started reaching out to people and just started with Facebook Messenger saying, hey, I'm starting this new idea. Would you be willing to just share a story about your life? And people were very confused. They're like, well, a devotional thought? No. A meaningful experience in your life.
Right.
And to my surprise, most of the people answering were like college students. I mean, younger people who were sharing about their surviving suicide attempts and experiencing abuse in the church and questioning whether they should leave or not. We had people who just really bared their soul in the most meaningful ways over Facebook Messenger.
Wow.
And I started to see as I started posting these stories, you know, at first it's like, you know, five of my friends are the people interacting with it. And the person who shared their family, you know, 10 people or something. And of course, mom, you know, every post like, good job, honey, you know. but it wasn't this like massive public thing. It was just an experiment. And as time went on, this picked up and suddenly, you know, 100 people like this story. And suddenly we have one where 1,000 people like the story. Mm-hmm. And suddenly thousands of people are liking the page and interacting with every post. And, you know, here I am working a full-time job and just doing this in the mornings and evenings on Facebook. And I have no long-term plan. Mm-hmm. I have no business training. I have no pastoral training. I just have that curiosity about people. And I wasn't even taking their pictures. I was just asking people to give me pictures they already had so we could use them, you know? So my whole experience is just messaging people and posting it.
Right.
and so the documentary series, people who are coming in and finding Humans of Adventism through this series are seeing the culmination of 4 years of heavy legwork.
Mm.
I've interviewed over 500 people in the past 4 years.
Okay.
And all I would do is set aside half an hour to an hour a day, and I would just message as many people as I could possibly think of that were Adventist. Mm-hmm. If there was a big fight under a Adventist Today or Adventist Review article, I would message both sides of the people. Mm-hmm. Say, you're Adventist, you're Adventist. Can I talk to you about your story? Can I talk to you about your story? just wherever I could find them.
Right.
People who graduated from academies, I would reach out to them. People I grew up with, of course, easy access to them. But really, all the corners that I could find. But this documentary series is interesting because I started this independently.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sharing stories from people who are across the range of sexual orientation that are Adventist.
Mm.
We're sharing people who have directly been harmed by the institutional church.
Mm-hmm.
We're sharing a lot of things that Adventist media is not going to cover for lots of different reasons.
Yep.
Right? So I've had to retain that independence if I want to keep sharing those stories.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to talk about like just the blatant and even the more subtle ways that racism works and Eurocentrism works in Adventism, and you have a large majority of administrators that are going to fall into that category.
Right.
Those are going to be the stories that get cut if all of a sudden I'm working for the church, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this whole time, you know, I've had to run this independently. And The Humans of Adventism documentary series is the first experiment with myself and the North American division on, hey, we disagree on lots of things, and we do things very differently. Mm-hmm. Can we find a project that overlaps? Mm-hmm. So it's not them coming in and saying, this is how you're going to run things now.
Right.
And it's not me saying, I'm going to do whatever I want if you fund this. Mm-hmm. It is a specific project with a beginning and end that says, here are the parameters we're both willing to work within. Here's what we're going to do. So really, this is almost historical in some ways, because the church has not been willing to hand over the keys and decision making in this way. I had very little micromanagement on this project. I basically said, hey, we want to make a documentary series in four different regions of the United States. We want to talk to people across different age ranges, different races, different, traditional versus contemporary, or maybe liberal versus conservative ideologies within Adventism. And they said, great, do it. You know, they wanted final approval, but we did not have a person from the NAD there on set making sure we did everything right, kind of speaking into how they wanted it to go. They really said, here is a limited amount of funds. Make something. If it goes well, we'll work together again. And same for me. You know, if it's too restrictive, if it's too micromanaged, this is all we do. Mm-hmm. But what came out of it was a beautiful exploration of the corners of Adventism. I would like to push those corners further, as always, and I always will. But we found a way to do something healthy together that did bring up important issues, that did bring up important experiences, and the reception has been really, really great. Mm-hmm. Between probably 25,000 and 50,000 people per episode have seen this series.
Yes.
Just on social media and YouTube alone. Mm-hmm. This is being used in Sabbath schools. We have a study guide for college groups and small groups. Wow. It's really blossomed, mm-hmm. and carried into the most beautiful, connecting relational, content. And that was my goal. Is I'm not gonna tell people what to believe. Mm-hmm. I'm just gonna give them a connecting, a facilitating, a catalyst for asking more questions and getting to know each other better.
Definitely. And I think when I caught the docuseries when it came out, I think it was in January, the yep. very first episode was on purpose. Yep. And it was a few days before I was launching this podcast. So I'm listening to this and I'm like, oh man, this is so timely.
That's perfect.
Yeah, it really was. I'm like, this is amazing. I need to watch the whole thing. So I was hooked.
Yeah.
So COVID has shown that we need human interaction. We need to be connected, and stories connect people. Do you think that, like, growing up, the Christian community put enough emphasis on connection?
No. Absolutely not. Not close to enough. Mm. and I know I speak from my own experience. I have met people where they did grow up in a healthy church. Mm-hmm. They did grow up in a relational, loving church that was involved with their local community. And I'm very happy for them. Mm-hmm. But that is not my experience. My experience growing up, it was very based on your mind. It was very based on theological knowledge. And while they would never say this explicitly, the attitude was always that knowledge and living by that knowledge is what saves you, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It is the understanding of the end times. It is the understanding of the writings of Ellen White. It's the understanding of why we keep the Sabbath and where, you know, that what's going on in the heavenly sanctuary and all of these things. But when it comes down to day-to-day relational life, mm-hmm. that was not taught as a faith value, mm-hmm. right? And so people who came into the church, it was primarily through argumentation. It was primarily through saying, this is why we're right, and you want to belong to the right church, don't you?
Right.
Well, that's us. For me, that actually drove me out of the church. You know, I became, as I got older, more and more desperate for meaningful connection, and not just from myself to other Adventists, but for my church and the community.
Right.
You know, I heard this quote, and I'll never forget it, or this question, and someone asked at a conference one time, if your church closed its doors, would your community know? And if they knew, would they care?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the sad answer for a lot of churches that I've been part of was, no, they wouldn't care. They might be relieved.
True.
Like, we, you know, the relational living and relational faith, I mean, I was not taught this Jesus, even. I was taught a Jesus that was preparing the disciples and people for the end of days and for heaven, but when I myself go back and read the stories of Jesus, how much time was he physically sitting mm-hmm. with his own body next to somebody? Mm-hmm. And how many times were his own disciples like, why are you with them?
Yeah.
The discrepancy there is so mind-blowing to me. And I'm so glad we get the stories of the disciples too, because you see their prejudice on display constantly, right? When the children try to come to Jesus, mm-hmm. they're the people trying to keep them from him. When he sits with a Samaritan woman, right? They're like, why are you with this Samaritan and woman? Right? I mean, all over the place, with the exceptions of the people that they really esteemed, which were some of the most exclusive elitist people, the Pharisees,
mm-hmm.
Jesus is connecting with them. And he's not just arguing and giving them words. He's living his life with them. He's sitting with them, eating with them. And I look at the Adventist church or Christianity in general, and I think, so you won't go to a bar. You won't go to the house of someone who proclaims to be atheist or Wiccan or Satanist. Okay, so the further you take this, you really end up only being with other Adventists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's anti-gospel to me.
Yeah.
To do faith without relationship is anti-gospel. It takes away the most hopeful and compelling part of Jesus' ministry on earth to me. I don't buy into my faith because I want to go to heaven or because I'm afraid of hell. I buy into my faith because Jesus modeled a different type of life, a different type of humanness that I want, mm-hmm. that I want to be like.
Right.
And if you take that away, I don't care. Like, if God is all about like just a massive reward at the end for keeping all the rules, what kind of God is that? Mm-hmm. And how can you convince me that he loves me if he doesn't want to have a relationship? Yeah. You know, when Jesus has to narrow it down, he says, love God and love your neighbor. And I feel like we have capitalized love God, and we have put in the smallest font we can, love your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
No, he took all of the everything and packaged it into those things, meaning that love your neighbor is so, so important and critical to understanding God.
Absolutely.
So no, I don't think the church did a good enough job raising me relationally. Maybe they taught me what not to do. But what I see in people as I do this work is a hunger for this, mm-hmm. a desperate hunger for relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when we've avoided relationship or when we've done it in an unhealthy way that we've created so many of the problems that we still deal with today mm-hmm. that we should have overcome a century ago.
Yes.
Or longer if you trace the Christian faith back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, if I can, this is part of what drives me, is to overcome that, to give people the tools to say, hey, this is important. And it's not just a nice thing to do in addition to reading your Bible. This is a value and a virtue that is a pillar, a central operational point of living life like Jesus did.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And like you said, there is a hunger for people to be connected to others, to be in a relationship, to belong. Like, we all want that. right? So
yeah,
so important. So what do you wish you had known 10 years ago?
10 years ago, I was 19 years old. I was getting ready to be married.
Wow.
My wife and I were married at 18 and 20.
Hmm.
And what I wish that I knew was that I don't need to be good at anything to have value. Mm. I don't need to be better than the next person. Because I was so desperate to be listened to and to be valued and to be loved and welcome that I had this very competitive nature. And what it did was it made me try to devalue other people so that I could have more value.
Mm-hmm.
Like that kind of dynamic, whether it was intentional or not, made me have to try to prove myself in order to get friends. It made me try to prove myself in order to have value in my community. And it changed how I viewed people. So when I looked at other people, it was better or worse than me mm-hmm. in whatever area.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last 10 years, one thing that I've really, really been taught the hard way, I believe by God. Sorry, phone call. Was that people are inherently valuable and inherently interesting. And we can have a collaborative understanding of each other that doesn't really have a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that I had known that because it would have saved me from damaging a lot of people. Mm. I'm definitely coming from, I'm on a journey of repentance and apologies for a lot of the relationships I damaged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of it was the way I was raised. Part of it was intentional choices that I made. But when you have that deep insecurity and that deep competitive attitude, you burn a lot of bridges and you do a lot of damage that you don't even know you're doing. And and you see it as part of the what's expected of you.
Mm-hmm.
So 10 years ago, I wish that I had that view of human beings. And 10 years ago, I just wish that I wish that I knew that all of the random places God would lead me through construction industry and service industry and all the weird jobs that I worked in college, that he was preparing me to be able to relate to a wide spectrum of people.
Mm.
Because I thought, you know, I looked around, I saw people succeeding, going to school for exactly what they wanted and getting a job right away. And my life never worked like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, why does God have a purpose for everyone but me? Mm. And he did.
Yeah.
He did have a purpose for me.
Yeah.
But that wide range of experience and kind of a general knowledge of how different realities work for people
mm-hmm.
was the preparation that I needed in order to do what I do today.
Absolutely. That was your purpose. And like you said, when you're on that path of healing from like the past,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything that you did, I think your purpose is even bigger and you reach even more people. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to somebody who wants to start something new?
Yeah. The most important question to ask yourself is how long can I keep doing this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Consistency right. is the most important thing. Not having the most original idea, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Not being the most skilled person, also good. But those are not the things that keep you going.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about your podcast, you know, I know a whole lot of people that made 5 really good episodes.
Right.
And I look back and they haven't made one since 2015. And I'm like, you did a great thing for a short period of time,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's always managing your expectations. You know, when I start something, how much do I believe in this thing and how long do I want to keep it going? If your intention is I want to do one season and see what happens, great. You know, mm-hmm. That's a great thing to do. But anytime that you're starting something that doesn't have a thought about planned ending, you really got to think about how much of your life regularly you want to dedicate to it. If you're going to do something continuous, you got to think about it as, you know, paying your bills or eating breakfast. I mean, it's that regular. If you want to keep up, it becomes a piece of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of people who didn't start out well, who made some really cringy content, that are doing amazing things today because for 5 years, they just continued doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happens when you work on something for 1 year, even, is you learn something every single time and you get this compounded skill, mm-hmm. and this compounded investment.
Yes.
That really pays off. Just like you're talking about, you know, I found Humans of Adventism through the documentary. Awesome. But for years before that, we've been building up to the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't start out with any kind of training. You know, I guess I did work for a newspaper, so that helped with interviews. But when you're looking at 40 interviews and thinking, how in the world am I going to make episodes out of these?
Yes.
How am I going to pack them into one cohesive storyline? Or how am I going to make the look of someone in Portland match the look of someone in South Carolina?
Mm-hmm.
Completely different worlds, completely different lighting and moisture in the air, right? Nothing prepared me for that aside from just living in different areas and being in different places and talking with people for a long time, where I started to think differently. So consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Consistency is the one thing I would think about when you're starting something. Think, what's my purpose? Is this to fill the time, or am I operating from there's something missing and I would like to help fill that.
Mm-hmm.
I know in your, some of your previous episodes, you've really dug into the meaning of introversion,
mm-hmm.
and not just the meaning, like the dictionary definition, but how that plays out in different people's lives.
Right. Yeah.
I sat in my living room and just listened to your interview. I was alone at home and processed that, thinking about, okay, you know, I also am introverted and I'm dealing with some of these things,
mm-hmm.
but some of these things are new.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these things are things that I don't deal with,
yeah.
and I don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're filling a missing conversation, that someone like me was like, I never get to hear about this. I love this, you know? So, you know, do you have that driving force and are you willing to keep doing it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would ask myself.
And it's so true, because I think when you start something new, the first thing,
yep.
is not consistency. You're not thinking about that.
You're
thinking,
yep.
I'm going to start it. How do I do this? What's the process? That's the last thing on your mind. So when you said consistency, I'm like, it's very true. It's not something that's the first thing that pops into your head. So, and it's so,
yeah.
important. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Well, Caleb, thank you so much. This was such an interesting conversation.
You're welcome.
Take care. That was such a great conversation I had with Caleb. I hope you found it insightful just as much as I did. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to this podcast. Follow me on Instagram at introverted_queenblog. Thank you so much for tuning in. Take good care, and until next time.